Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome you to the Monday edition here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can always go to PurdyInsurance.com. I'm sitting here in the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And the Let It Be Solar Hotline, which will be in use in a few moments when we talk to Dave Paulson, the head basketball coach at Bucknell. Is powered by Lenape Solar. You can go to lenapesolar.com and our number 1-800-795-9565. We'll be talking with Dave Paulson, the head basketball coach at Bucknell, at 3:20 this afternoon after their big win over Purdue. But again, he'll point out, and I'm sure he will, that it's just a start. Buhner's in the house. So a long talk with Bobby today. Bob, welcome.
Thank you very much. Lots going on in the sports world. My goodness. Bucknell, Penn State, football and basketball, Bloom University playoffs, high school football galore. Kevin Herr working on the 2018 playoff schedule, but we've got to get through 2012 first.
Absolutely. We'll do that. And, of course, Penn State, a lot of people want to talk about the call. I'll listen to what we have to say about the call. But also remember this, there are also a lot of opportunities in a football game to win it or lose it along the way. And we'll talk about all that and more at 1-800-795-9565. But first, above the noise, here's Dan Patrick.
If you want to have a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. From Sunbury Motors Hyundai, the Elantra, the 2012 North American Car of the Year, is leading the way with a new sale price of $18,795. That's one incredible price on a five-passenger car packed with safety features and awesome fuel economy. Just $18,795 for the beautiful Ruby Elantra with beige interior. On the lot right now at Sunbury Motors Hyundai. Ruby red, not your color? Don't worry, because you can find one in black pearl, shimmering silver, desert bronze, or harbor gray. Base model or with leather. Need heated seats or a sunroof? You can get it in an Elantra. This is one cool car at an extremely great value. Need a little more room? A larger trunk for the golf clubs or luggage? Hyundai and Sunbury Motors has you covered with a sensational Sonata. Also starting under $20,000 at $19,895. Hyundai is still the most fuel-efficient car company in America with America's best warranty. View the virtual lot online with all discounts applied at SunburyHyundai.com. Or stop by Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Welcome back, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steve Jones Show, SJS, on a Monday afternoon. And after Bucknell's big win over Purdue on Friday night, 70-65. And I think a guy that knows that is just the beginning and there's a long way to go, but will take the win anytime he can get it, is Dave Paulson. Dave, first of all, congratulations on the great effort of your kids the other night.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, it was a great team effort. Guys really hung tough in a hostile environment, and great to get out on the right side of the ledger coming out of the gate.
What worked the other night?
Well, I think we just showed a lot of composure. They got out up early on us, scored 15 points in the first media timeout. The guys kind of buckled down defensively, and when we were losing, even in the second half, there was no sense of panic, you know. And so it was an artistic game offensively. They make the game ugly. They really get out and pressure you. But we had some timely baskets. I thought we did a great job controlling the basketball, not turning it over. And Cameron Ayers was terrific throughout the game.
In fact, you and I talked about Cameron Ayers a little bit the other day as a guy that could be an X-factor guy for you. It looks like not only did he play some defense for you, it looks like he shot the ball pretty well for you.
No, he shot it great, and he made tough shots. I mean, you want to get a good shot. You want to get easy baskets. Sometimes against really good teams on the road, late in the shot clock, guys have to hit, tough shots and go make a play. And Cam made a number of those kinds of shots throughout the game. And he came up with hustle plays, loose ball. He converted into a three-point play and a big rebound on the stretch. So it wasn't just any one thing he did. He was just terrific on all facets of the game.
One thing that's unusual against Purdue, and especially at Mackey, is when you get more free throw opportunities than they do. That's unusual. Was it just the style that you played, other than the fact that there were some points they had to put you on the foul line at the end?
Well, I think, you know, our guys, we really tried to be focused on not fouling. I mean, that's one of the things that we said, you know, if you're playing a team on the road, you can't turn it over, you can't give up second shots, you got to win the battle at the foul line. So we really tried to emphasize that. We didn't do as good a job on the glass as I would have liked. But we did a great job there, and we also, especially in the second half, started driving the ball to the basket with more aggressiveness and throwing it inside. You know, they really got out and pressured our guards and made it hard for us to kind of run our offense, and we just had to go and attack. And we had a lot of guys go and do that in the second half.
Your three guards combined to play along the way 28, 37, and 37 minutes respectively and had three turnovers. What can you say about the ball handling of your team and how smart they were with the ball in the opener?
Well, it was key because, you know, we just were able to have as many possessions as we can. And that, you know, that's the thing. We're not always going to shoot it great, although we feel like we've got, you know, good players. We just want to every possession end with a shot at the basket. You know, whether it goes in or it doesn't, we got a chance to offensive rebound. It might get four offensive rebounds. But I think that was the key, that they just did such a great job taking care of the ball and allowed us to be in the game from that vantage point.
It's also a game where I think if people didn't watch it, they would assume that you hit your fair share of three-point shots. Bryson Johnson hit two, and that was it. To win a game like that where you're not, quote, bombing the three and making up ground that way, what does that tell you about the overall early makeup of your basketball team?
Well, I mean, one, it's really gratifying. It says that we really play with a lot of resilience when we weren't, you know, playing great offensively, we weren't zinging in shots, that we've got different ways to win. But we also, I'm sitting here watching film with George Mason, know that we're playing a much more talented team than Purdue at home tomorrow night. So we're done kind of congratulating them and getting them to try to refocus for tomorrow night's game.
In fact, that was going to be my next question, was about George Mason, because we know that George Mason brings the table a team that, like your team, knows how to play one-and-done games, knows how to play tight games. So that balancing act of, wow, that's a great start to, you better get ready for this one because it's going to be tougher even though it's at home. How do you do that?
Well, you know, our guys were not as focused as I'd like them to be yesterday in practice, so we did a lot of running. That's one way of doing it, Steve. But, you know, I think our guys understand because we've been that team that maybe people didn't realize how good they were. And, you know, George Mason beat a good Virginia team at George Mason on Friday night when we were beating Purdue. And this is a George Mason team that beat us last year. They're significantly better, I believe, than what they were last year. So, you know, hopefully we kind of got their attention yesterday and we'll sharpen up our execution this afternoon in practice.
You mentioned there you think they might be significantly better than last year. What makes them that way besides experience?
Well, certainly experience. I think they have more depth. They have two front court players that didn't play last year. One was injured, named Johnny Williams. He had 11 points yesterday. They have a guy from Serbia who very talented kind of European forward who was very, very impressive. So they have more balance and depth. Now, they had a great player in a guy named Pearson last year who's graduated and who was very, very hard to defend. But I think, you know, the ball is shared more. There's more of an identity or cohesiveness, or at least from when we played them a year ago. And they certainly had a very good year winning 24 games. But I'm more impressed watching them on tape this year than I was at the same point last year.
Okay, and then you got that. Now, obviously, I have some stuff to fall back on. Okay, on the category, when you look at your team, you show them the tape of the Purdue game. What have you told them about? This is what you did right. But at the same time, tell us, what did you tell them? Okay, now this must be better in order to improve.
Well, we gave up way too many second shots. And last year, we were the best team in America at our defensive rebounding percentage, number one out of 345 teams in the country. And that's what enabled us to be good. And we gave Purdue 10 second shots, and I can't really chart it, but I bet you they shot 80% on those shots. And then we had some just uncustomary defensive blunders where we gave them layups off of bad screens or flawed defensive coverages. So we felt like we gave Purdue, you know, they had earned enough baskets. And you want to beat a good team, every basket they make has to be earned, you know, through a good offensive sequence, a really good play. And it's, you know, we talk about them having to score challenge twos, shots, not wide open threes and nothing in the paint, somewhere in that middle area that you should have challenged two, and they had way too many shots inside the paint. So that's the biggest thing that we have to improve upon.
This next one tomorrow night at home at Soika against George Mason, give me an idea of the test of your team's leadership and also the test of your team's maturity in getting ready for this one.
Well, it's going to be a test because this is, since I've been here, you know, with the exception of Lehigh from our league, this is clearly the best team to come to Soika in my 5 years at Bucknell. So, you know, is a team that's only six years removed from the Final Four with great depth. Again, maybe the average fan doesn't realize how good George Mason is and how good they've been. So it's going to really be a test of our composure. I expect them to press us for 40 minutes. We're going to really need to be solid. They're a team that can go on big runs. So if for some reason they do go on a run, we have to show composure and just kind of stay the course and keep making it about how we play and what we're all about.
Well, it's interesting, though, you mentioned how the fans may not realize. I think what a lot of people don't realize, Dave, is there are probably 150, 160 basketball teams that are good basketball teams that can beat anybody on a given night. And I think people get too hung up on labels. And you're, of course, at Bucknell, so I'm sure you agree with that assessment.
Well, there's no question. I mean, George Mason, with no disrespect to Purdue, George Mason is significantly better than Purdue.
Right.
There's not even an ounce of question about it. And they were the better team than Virginia for 40 minutes on Friday night. You know, and that's the thing, and that's the great thing about coaching at Bucknell or coaching at a George Mason. You know, you get the right guys, and especially with experience, you could go and play and beat anybody.
Well, it'll be Tuesday night, George Mason at Soika in the second game of the season. Dave, congratulations on an impressive opening night win, but, of course, best of luck on Tuesday night against George Mason.
All right, thanks, Steve.
Dave Paulson, head basketball coach at Bucknell. Appreciate him stopping in to be with us today. And I did the interview in just such a way where Buhner gets only a few words.
I do. And, you know, Dave Paulson's done a great job.
Oh, my goodness.
Building up George Mason. And I think he's right in many respects. Paul Hewlett, the coach at George Mason, I believe he was at Georgia Tech before he came to Fairfax.
He was at Georgia Tech because before then he had the run-and-gun style Siena.
Yeah.
And I did his last game at Siena. The last game he coached at Siena, I did. It was in the Jordan Center. Penn State won it 105 to 103 in regulation, and Titus Ivory scored on a drive to the basket to get Penn State into the next round of the NIT. That was Paul Hewitt's last game at Siena.
Yeah, he is quite a coach, and I think it'll, as Dave Paulson said, one of the big teams to come into Soika, but I think the hometown fans will be packing Soika for this one as well. I think there'll be a pretty distinct home court advantage for the Bison.
Yeah, and that's great. They deserve it. It's a great opening win, but again, you know what's great about an opening win? Now, I'll say this. This is something that, and I, you know, it's hard for the Patriot to get more than one team. We know that.
Yes.
I mean, they're only the 37 openings. So, but under normal conditions, I remember Penn State in 2000, 2001, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In the second game of the season, and it was the opening night, played at Kentucky at Rupp. Penn State won the game, 77-73. Joe Crispin at 31, John Crispin at 26. Okay,
yeah.
And all season long, Penn State made the NCAAs that year. Kentucky went on a big time SEC run. I looked at Dave Baker. I said, Kentucky, a win over them, the gift that just keeps on giving.
Yes.
Because the domino RPI was huge.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Well, thanks to Dave Paulson for the time he gave us today. Nothing but the best to him. After this, it's Niagara Falls in a tournament.
New Mexico's in that lineup, I think, Steve.
Yes, they are, as a matter of fact. Let's get to the email, Bob.
Okay, Steve.
Bob Buhner on board. Kevin Hurst still out to pasture somewhere, grazing.
On pierogies.
Sarah's rolling her eyes.
Yes, she is.
I was laughing.
Today's show is brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. You can always go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm at the Chateau. Chambers looks at me today, says, "You're in the basement." It's the Chateau. I said, look, you come in, you take a look at it. Guess what? I said, you won't be calling it the basement any longer. He goes, buddy, I love it.
Is it a man cave kind of a basement?
Let's see. I guess neither one of you have been down here. Kevin has either. Drew Kelly was sitting in here. He can actually describe it to you. But it's very nice.
I would imagine.
I have some pictures on the wall. Let's see. What pictures do I have here? I have an aerial view of Beaver Stadium, Medler Field, Lebronto Park, and the Jordan Center. Now, why do I have an aerial view of that? Those are the three home venues I broadcast from.
I think you're very familiar with them.
Yes. I have a view from my seat to the left field wall at Fenway Park, a picture I took in the 100th year of Fenway Park, and then a picture next to it that I also took of the press box at Fenway Park where it says Fenway Park above it. And then, let's see, what else? I got a picture of Joe Paterno and me at Football Eve. Football Eve 2010. I have a picture of Jack Ham and me in the broadcast booth. And then there's this picture of me and the Nittany Lion. Let's see, what else? Then I have a picture of my seat, what the Beaver Stadium looks like from my seat in Beaver Stadium. And it's the Penn State Northwestern game. And then I have a picture from my seat that I took of Medler Field, Lebronto Park, of what the view looks like from my seat there, my broadcast seat. And then I've got one from the Jordan Center. I got one last one in here. It's Jack Ham, Dick Girardi, Jeff Tarman, Ron Moeller, and me.
That is together. The team.
We need to take a field trip. Yeah. Jeez.
What's this?
We need to take a field trip down there to your chateau.
Okay. And then I do have a picture of my brother and mother with me. Okay. So I do have that.
Yes.
They were here in April. So Sarah, you should see this. This is great.
Yeah.
You would like it. I mean, it's not really a man cave, but it's a broadcast studio with dressed up a little bit.
Sarah, road trip. That's what I hear the words coming through.
Road trip. I think that's it.
I mean, her's never been here. I mean, if you really want to drive him nuts,
yeah,
he's never been in here.
That will drive him nuts. He knows
So getting the two of you in here before him, I think is a great idea. The three of us should do this. I have three microphones here. I mean, you hear Nate Mink and Ben Jones.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Come in here every Wednesday from StateCollege.com. We have three mics here in the Sunbury Motor Studio. So we can do the entire show here and make him sit in Sarah's chair and run it from back there.
Yes, we could.
That would crush him. That would crush him.
Steve, I was going
to... Hold on a second. Sarah's on to something.
Oh, she is.
Sarah's on to something.
Steve, you commented...
How badly would it crush him?
And what we need, what we could do is take a picture and have that picture on the wall the time.
Absolutely.
He would come into the chateau.
And then later, we let him come down.
Exactly.
That way he feels like he ended up with seconds. But yeah, Drew Kelly. Drew Kelly's probably Drew in the station today?
He is.
Yeah. Ask him. He was sitting in here with me for the entire show about, I don't know, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's right. I remember he came down and visited you, so we'll get the...
Yeah, because he took the mobile studio, okay? When you see him, I need the mobile studio back, okay? I do need the mobile studio back, okay? Because we do have some stuff we have to do, including that Bucknell game a week from Friday. We're going to need the mobile studio then. Here's the email,
okay?
Steve, I appreciate your show and your insights, not only on Penn State, but sports in general. It's very kind. Thank you. I have been hearing conflicting information on the rules for eligibility of Penn State transfers over the last couple of months. Initial stories, and I'll have to, he's not listening to the show today. He's playing golf, by the way.
Oh.
So I'm going to have to physically email him back. But it's actually a good question for everybody to hear, so that's why I want to get it up on board here. Okay? So the initial stories were as follows. That until a player played it down for Penn State in a game, that they were eligible for a no-sit-out transfer. Once they played it down or more, that they, their transfer rights were lost in terms of not waiting out a year before playing. On Saturday, the TV network indicated that the rule was no matter how little or how much they played this year, all Penn State players can transfer to another school without waiting a waiting period until the first day of practice in fall 2013. Which rule is correct? Well, let's straighten that out for you. Okay? The deal on people playing was that they couldn't transfer now within the season. Okay, so in other words, let's just take Allen Robinson, okay? The second Allen Robinson played a down against Ohio University, he could not transfer this season. He could not transfer until after the season was over with on November 25th. That's what happens with the down, okay? Mm-hmm. Take Paul Jones, for example. Paul Jones, he's going to transfer, by the way, to Robert Morse, okay?
Okay.
All right, so Paul Jones is going to transfer to Robert Morse. But you take a player, for example, that hadn't played a down this year. Let's pick out Geno Lewis, okay? Say Geno Lewis back in the first week of September. Didn't play against Ohio University. He could transfer, enroll, practice right away for a team. He just couldn't play this year. He'd be eligible next year. Once you play in a play, though, you can't transfer out to another school until the semester's over. Okay? That's the difference. Anybody can transfer from this team beginning November 25th and go to any school they want and play the 2013 season.
Is that
up until August, whatever, the first day of campus, which I think is August 3rd or 4th.
Is that window only available through the first day of up to the first day of practice
first,
of 2013?
Yeah. Yes.
So next year, no way.
So once it gets to like be August 5th,
mm-hmm.
then you can say on August 12th you want to transfer, you have to sit out that year and you're not eligible to play till 2014.
I think you're right, Steve, to answer that question because I think I'm certain many, many fans were confused by what appeared to be conflicting news reports on this.
Right. So beginning on November 25th, that's a Sunday, right? November 25th.
It is a Sunday.
Yeah. Starting on that day, all Penn State players would be considered to be free agents.
I certainly hope the Illinois coaches don't try to make another road trip to University Park.
I think they're done with that.
I would hope so.
I think that the massive amount of bad publicity they received and how they were looked upon and frowned about. I'll be honest with you, Bob. I do see people coming in here and trying because there were people trying in the first month of the season through text messages and so forth, trying to get Penn State kids to still transfer even once the season started.
One of the things they did, Steve, that was striking to me was the, in one sense, subtle but not so subtle way they did it, were these out of these other schools went back to the high school coaches of the players to try and infiltrate through the back door to get to the students. And I thought that was pretty low, but that's my opinion.
Well, no, it is. I mean, and those are the contacts that they have, obviously, is that because that's the phone number they're going to have to get to the athlete. And I think they were trying to gauge interest and have, you know, talk to the kid and what will the kid say? Look, I mean, what Bill O'Brien has done along with his coaches, Charlie Fisher, Mac McWhorter, John Strollo, Stan Hickson, Charles London, Ted Roof, Ron Vanderlinden, Larry Johnson, John Butler. And then, you know, and don't count out what Fitzy's done, what Timmy Bream's done, plus the people that are still here, Spider, Kirk, you know, Wayne Sebastianelli, the whole group. I think what they've done is that they have laid the groundwork so that the players now know exactly what they have and why they should be staying. Instead of looking out, I mean, for the players who transferred, I don't think they knew how this was going to play out. They went through spring practice, and that's what they had, spring practice. And they were going through summer workouts, and that's what they had. It's really different once you go through a preseason and then once you actually go through a season. That's when you really know, you know, how's it going to be? When? How are we going to be treated when we win? How are we going to be treated when we lose? How's the practice going to be? How, you know, and then you start getting a feel as to what you have. And I think the what we've seen now is that the players have a real feel for the coaches. Coaches have a real feel for the players. And I think it, whatever, if anything happens, will be kept to an absolute minimum because I think the players like what they have.
And, you know, in the normal course of any season at any school, there are going to be a few players who are unhappy with any number of things, playing time, the classes that they're taking, academic challenges, don't like their roommate. All of that bears on whether they want to be back next year, but that happens across the board.
Oh, broke up with my girlfriend.
Yes.
You know, I mean, people don't realize things like that.
Oh, absolutely. Or my girlfriend's back at the University of whatever.
Right.
Bloomsburg University had a great player from Selins Grove named Ryan Chuck. Incredible mm-hmm. talent at the Division II level. Girlfriend field hockey player went to Ohio State. Ryan left Bloomsburg University and as a walk-on actually made the traveling team at Ohio State. Didn't play a lot. But it was, I think, maybe a girlfriend issue, and yet, and also a chance to play, you know, D1 football. But girlfriends do hold sway.
And they do. And I've seen players stay here because of that. People thought they were going to transfer. I've seen players stay here for that reason. I mean, the opposite. The play on Saturday.
There's a broken TV down in Hershey, Pennsylvania. That's all I'm saying, and without admitting any further liability.
Well, look, does he score? Yes. Is it improper use of, I mean, is it botched use of replay? Yeah. You know, now it's hard. It was hard for me at the moment to take a look at it. The reason being is that the way the broadcast booth is constructed, I don't understand why they do these things. Jack and I complain about it all the time. But the TV monitor, there are two levels, the engineer's level and then the broadcast level's down below in the well. We're down below in the well. Guess where the TV is? Where the engineer can see it.
Like, not helpful.
Like, who thinks of this? Minnesota, by the way, does it right. They have one up there. They also have one down there for the broadcasters to look at. So Jack's looking back, and look, Jack said, look, I think it's a touchdown, but he said they may not overturn it, which probably is right. And then the thing's right over my head. So I got a quick look at it. My first thought was it's a touchdown. Well, everybody thinks that everybody that looked at it thought it was a touchdown except for the two people that looked at it.
Yeah, and they had the only votes in that election.
I mean, it's exactly right. They had the only votes. Now, the guys in the field, I don't blame them at all. This is bang, bang, okay? So that part I understand. It's bang, bang for them that when they look at it, you know, they did the right thing. They called what they thought they saw, and they let the replay official then take care of it after that.
One of the big ironies to this, to me, Steve, is that there were some previous years where there wasn't replay in the Big Ten that caused a few folks at Penn State to squawk about it, and replay was implemented because of some really questionable calls, what, about 8 years ago now?
Yeah, it's 2002 is 10 years ago.
Okay, and so we get replay, and here we are 10 years later. Ouch!
Right. Now, I want to point out something because, obviously, I have felt over the years that even though there are bad calls that have gone against Penn State, there's certainly obvious ones. The one that Derek Toles knocked the ball out of Hartsock's hands and it bounced off the ground back to him, and then they called it a catch and a first down. You're like, what are you watching? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That people think that, you know, all these calls go against Penn State, go against Penn State and so forth. Look, I did a game last year with Purdue at Beaver Stadium. Purdue is driving downfield, trying to take the lead. It's a critical point of the game. Turbush overthrows somebody. Nick Suke drives to the ground. The officials on the field rule it an interception. Okay? Now the replay officials want to take a look at it. Don't blame them. That's exactly what they should do. Well, Jack and I look at the replay, and this time we're in the Beaver Stadium box, so the replay monitor is right next to us. We don't have to look up, down. It's right there in front of us. We take a look at it, and the fans always turn around and look at us.
Yes, they do.
Right? All the time. You know, so you have to give the old gladiator thumbs up, thumbs down thing, you know? Right? So we look at it, and it takes us, within 2 seconds, the two of us look at each other. Jack and I know it's trapped. Okay? It hit the ground. We see it. It's obvious. Plain as day. Hit the ground. I mean, we didn't really have to, you know, we looked at it a couple more times. Well, every time we looked at it, the ball hit the ground. Right? So we looked at the fans down below, put thumbs down, and I start explaining on the air that it's going to be third down. They're going to put the ball back here, blah, 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 blah. That's what's going to happen. They call back down. Call on the field upheld. The two of us looked at each other like, what? What do you mean call upheld? The ball hit the ground. He trapped it. All right? So that was a call that went Penn State's way where the replay official botched that up and it benefited Penn State.
I think the theory is in the long run, these things are all supposed to even out. But in this, in the sting of a defeat, there's a lot of people thinking conspiracy theory that wear the Nittany Lion logo.
Right. I understand that. And I've listened to too much of that over the years.
Yeah. And, you know, the classiest thing I read was the comments by Mike Maldi and Jordan Hill after the game, who said, look, these things happen. You know, we had a chance. You know, that doesn't guarantee we're going to win. You got to work your way through it, play your way through it, and, you know, you just can't let it bother you. You've got to move on.
Well, I mean, look, actually, Patrick Chambers talked to me about that today. He was listening to the game at that moment, and he said, you and Jack really handled that thing. And I said, well, I appreciate that. I said, look, I said, number one, I said, you can't, I said, on TV, they can belabor it, okay? Because they have pictures, so they can go back and they can go back because they are showing you video. On radio, you can't. You can't whine, moan, and complain about something on the radio continuously because then you lose track of the game. The most important thing you have to do at that moment is call the next play. Because here's my theory on all this, Bob. Okay? Look how much time's left in the game. A lot. Penn State can get, because they're going to get the ball at the 20-yard line, they can get a three and out. And if they do, get a punt and maybe get the ball at the 35, 40-yard line and have 60 yards from, they can still win the game. And
that's
if you're good enough, you can still do that. So you can't sit there. And look, a game is 60 minutes in length. Okay? Now let's look at the 60 minutes in length of this game. Zach Zwinak, who had a great game, right?
Oh, 141
yards.
Oh.
Right. But he fumbled at the 7-yard line in the second drive. Okay? Nebraska turned around, went the other way, got a field goal. It's a 10-point swing right there. Right? You have that play. Now, that's evened up by the fact that Maudy strips the ball of Martinez at the 3, and Jacob Fignano recovers in the end zone. So the Penn State got that one. There's also the breakdown and the big pass play to Kyler Reed. And Jack and I repeatedly talked in that game that every time Reed came in, he was a threat for a big play. Lost in the Michigan State-Nebraska game, everyone, and say again, fans and media concentrate too much on a single play and lose track of the game because it's not sexy enough.
Right.
Okay? We've become a TMZ thing. Okay? We're TMZ. We focus on the controversy. I got it. Lost in the Michigan State-Nebraska call, okay, that was a bad call, no doubt, was the fact that on third down and 10, Martinez hit, guess who? Kyler Reed for a big play of 30 yards to get the ball inside the 15-yard line to then set up that play in the end zone. All right? Well, again, big play to Reed. Sets up a touchdown. Let wide open, missed coverage, whatever happened to be. But there he is again. Right? Also lost, and this is the number of yards that Nebraska got running right in this game. They found something on that right side that kept working for them, working for them, working for them. Okay? The Lehman call is a blown call, no doubt. Okay? No doubt. But there were also other opportunities to put this game away. You are up two touchdowns at halftime. And immediately, Nebraska goes downfield in their opening drive and score. You can't have that happen. And number two, in the second time in a big game this year, Matt McGloin throws one over the middle. It's picked off and it's run back to the 4-yard line, and all momentum goes that way. Now, Penn State, to its credit, after that bad start to the third quarter, picks itself up, drives downfield, and gets a field goal from Sam Ficken, and Penn State has the lead going to the fourth quarter. Okay? So you have to have the ability to, after a bad call, to pick yourself up and say, look, you're going to get a three and out. You're going to get the ball at the 35-40. You're going to drive downfield. You're going to win it. All right? And I know there's so much concentration on bad calls, controversial calls, because it's a call that cost Penn State the game. No doubt. But there were also other moments in that game that swung it Nebraska's way and didn't win it for Penn State.
And what, 160 plays on average per game? Somewhere?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was one of 160, less than 1%.
I mean, look, it is a critical play. It is the wrong call. It is the reason replay is put in to rectify that call. Replay didn't rectify the call, okay? And it's bizarre that it doesn't, okay? It is a critical play. But on the whole, in that game, Penn State, you look at the game, there's so many swing plays in that game. The big pass to Reed is a swing game. It's a swing play. The fumble by Zwinak. Okay? When we talk about 160 plays in a game, and I have talked about this repeatedly, there are 5 to 9 plays in every game that are swing plays. Now, it may be play 3, play 14, play 40, play 100, play 150. Okay? You don't know which one it is. Well, guess what? The Zwinak fumble occurred on, what, play 22 of the game?
Yeah, right up
Huge
front early.
Play. Huge play. Okay? Huge play in the 7-yard line. Took points off the board. At minimum, it's a 6-point swing, and I think at that point, the way Penn State's playing, it's a 10-point swing. 10 points!
Yeah, they were rolling at that point. There's no question they had the momentum.
I mean, 10 points. Now, Nebraska does the same thing. Martinez hits hit by Marty at the 3, fumbles, Fignano recovers in the end zone. Okay? You know, it's not just one play. There's a series of things in that game where you've got to look at where you had the lead and didn't, you know, and Nebraska does a great job of coming back. Penn State, to its credit, bounced back from that and retook the lead.
Yes.
Well, they could have bounced back from this and retaken the lead. You know, the safety call, by the way, is a good call. I don't know. The safety call was a good call, by the way. Okay, he doesn't, you know, I have people saying he was out of the tackle box. What tackle box are you looking at? He barely moved. He went straight back. I mean, he went straight back, never moved. And he put the flag down. He went and consulted with one official. And I'll tell you what the first question was. Did the ball cross the line of scrimmage? Okay, which it did. Okay, then they asked the other official, was the receiver in the area? And he wasn't. So Ortiz wasn't in the area. He was like 10, 15 yards downfield with his back to it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The one question I think a lot of people are wondering is, will there be any repercussions for the replay officials as a result of this obvious bad call they made?
Say that again?
Will there be any repercussions?
Could be. Yeah, it could be. I'll tell you right now, the crew that worked the 49ers-Rams game,
yeah.
They're going to be at Kevin's house this weekend watching the game. I can guarantee you that gang of 7 isn't working an NFL game this weekend.
Be over.
They lost 1:28 of the clock on a measurement. How do you do that?
Where does the time go?
News is next. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com.